and welcome to Biblio Banter. Here, this is a tiny special episode, and I am glad to welcome our guest, Faye from Faye's Parallel Stories on YouTube. Hi, Faye.
Hi. Hi.
I'm so glad that you agreed to talk to me about books today and bookish stuff. And in today's special, me, Natalia, and my guest, Faye, we're going to talk about BookTube and in particular, reading marathons. So we'll discuss for us as readers and for us as bloggers, what do marathons do? So let us begin with introducing your channel to our listeners. So guys, I'll leave the link on our blog. So please make sure to check it out and follow Faye on YouTube.
Come by, say hi.
So your channel is called Faye's Parallel Stories. Can you tell us how did you pick this particular title?
The cheesy explanation, which is probably the honest one, is that I have a favorite quote by Stanislav Lec, which is, two parallel lines meet in the future and they believe they will. So just sort of my cheesy quote, and I like the parallels. Also, the slightly more rational explanation was that I started the channel when I was extremely frustrated working on my PhD. And yeah, I kind of wanted a way to have a space for very different sides of my life, because I felt like it wasn't really possible to have them sort of logically fit together. I was a bit torn, sort of like, am I a PhD student? Am I someone who enjoys acting as a hobby? Or am I just like really into this reading thing? And that's sort of, you know, existential crisis in the middle of your 20s.
Yeah, we've all been there, yeah.
Yeah. I feel a bit almost cute admitting to that now. But at the time, it was also like a positive motivation. Like, hey, cool. That way, I have a bit more of a dedicated place for my love of reading. And that can sort of exist in parallel with sort of my academic and work life. And they don't have to battle each other. And I don't have to read academic psychology texts. I can read something fluffy and thrilly, or something sort of also serious but has nothing to do with what I have to read for work. And that's why Faye's Parallel Stories at the time made sense. And then I just believe that once you pick something, you kind of have to stick with it.
Do you feel like right now, like if to take the first explanation, they kind of crossed?
Like, yes, totally. Yeah, because I did very much feel like I had these things, parallel things that were all happening in my life, and they all were important to me, but they also kind of were in competition with each other and didn't really make sense together. And now they do. Or I just accepted that there were like different things that are allowed to exist next to each other.
A very interesting thing that you mentioned this, because I have just read a post by some other bookstagrammer who is doing her master's in literary studies. And she actually also struggles mm-hmm. to kind of bring together her blog on Instagram as this kind of like popular culture kind of blog, while also studying properly like literary theory.
Yeah.
How these two academic and non-academic fields work together is a challenge for all of us, I guess.
Yeah. And I kind of have the easy option because my work has nothing to do with my reading. So I also don't feel like I have to be highbrow because I'm not representing sort of like my skill as a reviewer or as a professional literary theorist. Like I can just say, this was fun. This is why I enjoyed it.
What do you do on your channel? What type of videos? Because we know BookTube is full of different things.
The main thing I try to always do, because that's also, I think, the thing that I sort of officially enjoy the most, is talking about what I read. Sort of BookTube lingo, wrap-ups. So the recollection of what you read, usually in the last month, and almost like a reading diary in a way, sort of recapping books I liked, books I didn't like mini reviews of, I don't know, the last six books I read, something like that. I have the odd review, sort of if a book makes me want to share more detailed thoughts about it, that I feel like that almost can go two ways. If it works well, if I feel like I've sort of convinced my thoughts in a good way, then those are almost the most rewarding videos, because someone who will watch a review of a certain book either is thinking about reading that book or has already. And that's also where like the conversation is sort of more in detail. I sometimes risk feeling like I'm doing a school assignment when I do that, because then I do have to sit down and I do want to sort of talk about the different themes. And sometimes I feel like I don't do that justice, but I try. So that's also something I do. Yeah, we wanted to talk more about like reading marathons and readathons, how they are sometimes sort of those two words are bunched together. And I do quite a few of those. And sometimes I'll talk about my plans for those reading marathons. And sometimes I do sort of more like vlog style videos. During the week, for instance, I try to just keep track of what I'm reading in real time. That sounds a bit pretentious, but you know, there you go. yeah, that's basically what like, yeah, a reading blog is, with sort of snippets of what happens in the week. I don't want to bore people with the minuscule details of what I ate when, but I enjoy watching the videos more. That also give you a feel for what kind of person we're watching. So yeah, you see a lot of my dog if you watch those videos.
I also like to see guests you have in your videos every once in a while. Oh, nice. That's great.
Yeah, that's fun. Yeah. I also like, also that kind of sort of breaks down, again, sensing a theme, breaks down like the different parts of my life. And I do also, I remember being kind of nervous about telling friends that I like post videos on YouTube, because I sort of thought that was like a bit of a weird thing to do. So many reacted in such a sort of positive, encouraging way, which was really, really fun.
A quick question about your reviews and opinions about the books, because I think that's very important and interesting debate in book blogging and reviewing in general. Do you only give positive reviews, or do you also share negative?
Ooh. So if I do a reading vlog and I end up reading a book that I hate, yeah, sure, that happens, then I'll mention it. I think it's bad taste more than anything, or rude, to have a dedicated video where I sort of slander a book. I haven't done that. I must admit, I think I'm pretty sure I've not been quite so high and mighty, and I have done sort of an end of the year video talking about books I liked the least this year. I think I've done that. Yeah, I gotta admit.
So you have mentioned also readathons or reading challenges, reading marathons. They go by many names. Let us try to define what is actually a reading marathon for those of our listeners who are not native to Bookstagram or BookTube.
How would I define it? I think there always has to be a defined time span in which you read. So before we called, I sort of tried to think of like what kind of readathons have I taken part in, and there are super different, like varied ones. So like what I can think of, which maybe like, you know, illustrates time span, there's a 24-hour readathon concept where, you know, you read as much as you can in 24 hours, which reminds me the most of, oh, this is going like on a super tangent, but I am a huge Gilmore Girls fan, and they do like a dance-a-thon, yeah, where they have to like dance until they drop for 24 hours. So that's kind of the same with a readathon.
Nice.
Yeah. And then there's, you know, a readathon that will span over a month. So I think that is the only criterion that is totally necessary for something to be a reading marathon, that there has to be a prescribed time frame. And because I do also think there is this social aspect, you're doing it with other people, so there's like a beginning time and an end point, and that is the same for everyone. So we all know, I don't know, there's something romantic, I don't know, maybe a sort of idealistic about thinking like I'm reading right now and somewhere across the world other people are reading with the same goal.
Yeah, so it's sort of like community uniting aspect.
Yeah. When I start getting a bit more wonky with my definitions, in sport, there is always a winner. With a marathon, there's always a winner. I don't think you can win at a reading marathon. But in theory, usually there are prompts or challenges, and you can fulfill those, or you fail at fulfilling those. And then I guess you can, you know, yeah, you can like assign yourself a badge or give yourself a pat on the back if you sort of ticked all the boxes. And there's all kinds of things that people are getting so much more creative with setting up different reader signs because there's so many. Like now loads have like bingo reading boards, like with sort of, you know, you'll have like a checkered board with all kinds of prompts and you can like tick them off and then you can like get a bingo and then I guess you win if you like have four in a line. But because I am quite type A anyway, I try to not always succumb to the pressure.
Can't imagine. It's almost impossible, I think. All right. Also, an important thing. So the challenging aspect is not as strong with reading marathons as an actual sport. But who controls it? Like, who's in control? Who sets the rules for every particular marathon?
Well, there's always someone who invents it, I guess. You know, it always has to start somewhere. I guess I could just sit by myself and come up with, I guess I could make a list of books I wanted to read and set myself the goal that I have to read those in the next 2 weeks. But I wouldn't count that as a readathon because I'm doing it by myself. And yeah, usually it's one or two people, a bookstagrammer, a booktuber, a blogger. I don't know. I don't know what was the original readathon, but I feel like the blogging world is the oldest somehow. Gut feeling, that's what I would reckon. And that's probably where it originated. And now you can sort of often see that there are really big readathons where like thousands of people join in and they are represented across different platforms. So there's like a BookTube readathon once a year. That's sort of big. Mm-hmm. There's one BookTuber, what's her name? Ariel Bissett, I believe. And she's like one of the big ones and she heads it and she comes up with prompts. And she'll invite other people to co-host. And then she usually has like someone on Instagram who is like bigger on Instagram or uses it more or enjoys it more. I don't know her. I don't know what her criterion is. And then there are like quite often unique aspects and prompts or like photo challenges on Instagram that are different to the YouTube experience.
Definitely, absolutely.
So yeah, there is like actually a person who comes up with these prompts and the time frame. Sometimes they just, you know, want to celebrate their favorite genre and everyone reads from that genre. Or, you know, there are like readathons that are very sort of time specific within the year. So they will celebrate in America, especially like Black History Month, emphasize or encourage people to read more books by Black authors, people of color. So the thematic context is totally up to the inventor.
Have you ever started your own marathon?
No, because I think it's quite a lot of work. I'm quite lazy. I also, and I think maybe that's not the quite so self-deprecating reason, I do really like trying to fulfill challenges that someone else has come up with. And I don't know how I would do that for myself, because if I come up with challenges myself, then I'm already biased towards what I like to read.
True. Yeah.
I like being forced to read things. I either like being forced to read things that I usually wouldn't pick up, because you can really sort of retreat into your bubble and only read what you like reading anyway. I like doing that. I also like bending the rules as far as I can and trying to come up with reasons why these four books that I just bought coincidentally fulfill these 20 prompts that someone else has come up with.
Yeah, absolutely. And I believe the last one you've posted on your channel was also a wrap-up marathon video.
Yeah. The last one I did was the Springathon, which probably ranks as one of my more favored ones.
Ooh.
Because I totally go by what I think sounds good. So I don't, that's really the main thing that I pay attention to if I decide if I'm going to do a reading marathon. And the Springathon had a few prompts, which I don't remember because they were quite loose and there weren't that many. The very main overarching one was that we were all asked or inquired or told, depending on how strict you want to be about to read books with nature writing. The two women who were sort of the hosts, they put an emphasis on nonfiction nature writing. That's the ideal reading marathon because, you know, chances are high that I'm going to like it and it's going to push me to read something that I generally don't pick up. So, yeah. And I have quite a few unread books on my shelf. So usually I am able to fit those into the different prompts. I believe the prompts were something along the line, you know, something with the bird on the cover, something to do with water. Always sort of words, you know, nature words in some sense that were motivating us to pick books.
What was the most challenging marathon so far? Like the hardest to go through for you?
I think I try to sometimes just because for the sole reason that I think the community around that readathon is so likable and the people involved are so clever and I really like their thoughts on the books that they read that I kind of want to be a part of that. I try to take part of it, and that's the Victober. It always takes place in the month of October with the goal of reading Victorian books. And that's sort of the most challenging to me because that's then when I think, oh, maybe I should have a degree in literary studies because it's not my comfort area. I haven't read a lot of other books from that time frame, so I don't feel like I sort of naturally have the language or like a reference point to sort of judge the books. I'm not a huge history buff, so quite often I find myself not really knowing, okay, is this like actually a social commentary right now, or is that just down to the author's personal experience? So I have to stretch my reading habits, but for that reason I also like it. And then maybe depends what you mean with difficult, really, or challenging, because the 24-hour reading one is, you know, physically challenging sometimes. You get tired.
I'm still curious about the people who do the 48-hour marathons, because I have seen a couple of those running around on YouTube or on Instagram, some even TikTok about it. But technically, what I saw was those really long sped up videos, people actually reading for 48 hours straight. Also while walking, like they just get a lot of food and sit in their room and read until they finish like 4 books or something. So I'm still curious about how you do that.
I'm literally not able to do that. I'm also not able to be awake for 48 hours, even doing more stimulating things than reading. So no chance. I also have never read for 24 hours, like on end. Like I can't do that. I'm going against my rules, not strictly a readathon because it wasn't a group-based thing, but two people can be a group, right? I did a challenge with my boyfriend. The challenge was, can I read 24 hours over a weekend? Or can he play video games for 24 hours?
Wow.
Yeah, I'm disappointed to say he won. But yeah, I can't. Yeah, no, I can't read that much out prolonged period. That's too much.
Can't even imagine how it feels. I think I did it once accidentally because I really wanted to finish a book before a book club meeting, and it was quite a thick one. I was a German writer, so Erich Maria Remarque, and I was speeding through it. It was intense. I don't think it was a great experience.
But I guess there was even more of a motivation to finish it with that.
Absolutely. So speaking about dividing the marathons or reading periods into parts, for me, this is actually a bit of a disadvantage, not the dividing, but the fact that there are time constraints in the reading marathon. This is basically my only, not point of critique, but my only problem with readathons, that I find it hard to adjust my normal routine to 24-hour period, let's say, or a month of reading or 2 weeks of reading particular novels.
Sure.
So I was just thinking, am I the only one out there?
No, not at all. Related to that, the thing that bugs me the most is that I'm never able to wrap up all the books I have on the go because I'm notoriously bad anyway and read multiple books at once. I never manage to start, you know, first hour of a readathon with a clean slate and, you know, open up my first book and that's what I'm reading. I never managed to do that. So then I always have the choice. Do I ignore the books that I had on the go and start all these books that I'm planning to read for the readathon? Or do I mix and match? Then I'm a total stickler for rules at the end of the day as well. So I'm like, if I've started a book before the readathon, then it doesn't count for the readathon, which is stupid. Like, who's policing me? No one. I also do things like track how many pages I read every day, just for fun for me. So there is something about these like numbers and how much can I do in a week? How many books can I read in a month? Did I read more books this month than last month? And whenever I make the decision to take part in a readathon, I do read a little bit more than I would just for me without that incentive. So yeah, it is constraining. You're right. It is, you know, gamifying reading, which you can say silly and takes the fun out of it, or regulate something that should be just your hobby. I'm choosing to put myself under that pressure.
Yeah, I think there is a particular fun in it as well.
Yeah, probably. Yeah,
I think because a lot of people still do that.
Yeah, and like I said, I do only participate in readathons that I think sound fun. So that's already, what kind of examples could there be? Okay, so yeah, sticking with readathons, there's readathons that center around reading thrillers, for instance. I quite like a thriller, but it's very rare that I enter a week thinking, yeah, three thrillers in a week. That sounds like fun. So that's just not a readathon that I'm very likely to join, because it's very unlikely that on day five I will still be motivated to pick up another thriller after already having read two others. So that, that's not. And then there's the Springathon. Yeah, I talked about that one, about nature writing, where chances are there are books that I wanted to read anyway, and now I just have that extra little push.
That's probably something that I need, because my TBR pile is just growing exponentially.
Which readathon did you try?
Oh god, that was quite a while ago. I think one of them was actually just something like 7 days, seven books or something, that was meant to push you to finish the books you have already started, or just pick up the thin books from your TBR pile.
Okay, that's kind of
which
nice.
Means you should be able to actually finish, like, be realistic, don't pick up a 300 page novel for a day. But the idea was actually to finish the ones you've started and to get the new ones from your TBR pile read. But I think I ended up not managing that. Yeah, it's an interesting idea, and still plan to try it at some point when I get a bit more order into all of the cool things, my like other cool projects that I'm doing right now. Unfortunately, they only have
such a struggle. Hours. So many good things happening.
Yeah. That's like that's why I'm like, it's not that I'm complaining about not having time. It's more like I just need more time to do more cool things. For example, like podcasts and so on, and the journal.
Yeah.
So yeah,
I get that. I've also noticed that with more regular working hours, I started the BookTube when I was a PhD student, which means you can work every single minute of your life or not work at all. You know, you have a lot of flexibility. So it was very possible to just go, yeah, this week I'll put more of a focus on reading this week. And now I have to go into the office if there's a readathon going on or not.
So it looks like we have pointed out quite a lot of interesting and positive aspects for us as readers, and also one negative aspect that also can be seen positively, like time constraints. Sometimes people need them. So it depends on the person, I guess.
Yeah.
But I was also thinking, what good can it do on a larger scale? Like, what interesting aspects can readathons have for like community, for education? Like you mentioned, for example, the Black Reading Month, when people promote particularly fiction and nonfiction written by Black authors, which is an example of this kind of readathons. And then I was also thinking about Own Voices readings or Decolonizing Bookshelves movement. Yeah. Have you ever heard of any other examples of these kind of reading?
A lot of readathons have prompts along those lines. So even if they're not sort of dedicated to a cause, they still try to put it in there. I think there's like a queer lit readathon as well.
Probably because it's a Pride Month. So we are recording this episode still in the Pride Month. It's going to come out a bit later.
So June, there is also like a focus on reading books by and about queer people. That's one I'm aware of. There's one readathon that I've joined in, which is called the Sam Fantail, which has the goal of reading fantasy books by female authors. So that sounds really niche, but if you sort of look at the sort of publishing tradition in fantasy books, there's, you know, a lot of white men. And that sort of tries to put a bit more of an emphasis on female authors. And I guess in the end, there's the very direct effect that more books that fit into these readathons get read, but there's also a discussion, right? There's sort of a conversation about why is it necessary to have this focus? Because, I don't know, female authors make less money, for instance.
Also get published less often.
Yeah, so I do think that can help. Also, quite often some readathons will have like a book, like one read-along book where you can sort of feel free to also read that book whilst trying to fulfill all the other prompts and all the other challenges. If that is not enough, then there's like quite often like one dedicated highlighted book. And I guess then it's down to the hosts of the readathon to think very carefully about what kind of book they want to highlight. And that is an opportunity to very directly, of course, then support, I don't know, an indie press or an own voices author or, well, a representative of a marginalized group or a topic that is sort of very political and valuable to then read a book about it. Like, I think a readathon can only really be as good as the people running it in the end.
True.
So there's a lot of potential, but also loads you could screw up. I don't know. Am I allowed to swear here? you could also, I don't know, come up with the Angry White Men readathon and encourage everyone to read only the canon and only bestsellers, and then, well, what good will you have made? But that's my experience is that by and large the readers in the sort of social booktube bookstagram hemisphere is relatively conscious about these things. Not everyone's perfect, but you know, they try.
I think that's also a great part about BookTube's community, that a lot of education is happening there as well. And also, yes. I think you mentioned this interesting aspect, read-alongs, which is a separate thing, which I think is fascinating, because for me, this is an equivalent of a reading club that we would have normally offline, which is a bit hard nowadays. We hope to get back to normal, but especially nowadays in June 2020, we notice, or all the previous months of 2020, we notice how much more helpful it is that you can still find people to talk about this particular book that you're reading this month online. And maybe somebody also prepares extra materials, some background information on that. And so a lot of sharing is happening online. And then you can have even wider opinions, because you can have this virtual book club with people from all over the world. Having all the opinions you can get.
And the only real experience I have, like, strictly speaking, doing that is that I did that. I did that once for Victober with Emily Gaskell's, what's the book called? Mothers and Daughters? Daughters and Mothers? Wives and Mothers? I don't know. Something like that. Two women. Wives and daughters, maybe?
Something like
perhaps
that.
Perhaps. We'll see how well that worked. and that was really cool, because that was really over a month, quite chunky book, and the chapters were divided up so that it did actually take you over the course of the month. And then there was like a good read group. So then the different chapters had different threads, so you didn't risk, you know, reading any spoilers if you weren't up to date yet. And that was really helpful for me personally, because as I said, Victorian books, Victorian literature is not something that I feel very informed about. So then reading other people's thoughts about it who had read other books by Emily Gaskell, for instance, other books from the era, I could just profit from other people's knowledge.
Yeah, that's a great exchange that's happening there. You just mentioned Goodreads, for example, in groups there. How do you keep track of the books you read for marathons?
I do use Goodreads. I use Goodreads all year, so not just for reading marathons. And that's also the main thing I use Goodreads for. So just, you know, I'll click what I'm currently reading and then I update it when I've read it.
See, that's perfect. I have this consistency in me. I cannot stick to using Goodreads. I'll update it like every 3, 4, 5 months when I remember about it.
Oh, no, but people like you are horrible to follow on Goodreads, because then I see an update. I'm like, what the hell? Did she seriously need 6 books this weekend? Like, no, she just updated.
Yeah, I'm sorry. See, that's why public marathons don't work for me as well. I just can't stick to you.
Maybe what would work better for you, which I also do, but not as such a like hard and fast rule, but most of the time I will also take notes, just like, I don't know, the hip millennial thing to say is probably a bullet journal, but it's just notes, a book with paper in it, and I take notes in it. So I will sometimes do that, and sometimes also like also for YouTube videos, because that way I can like jot down a few points about the book. I can write down the names of characters, mm-hmm. because I can never remember those, and sort of like I do use that, and because I do like to track how many pages I read in a month, or rather every day, I do also use just like a memo on my phone, mm-hmm. very simple, just sort of at the end of the day I'll write down like what page I got to, something like that, mm-hmm. because I don't always carry my book around with me, but I will never be found without my phone.
Yeah, this is, I think that's our generational thing. I just actually hit the other day, I didn't know that it can happen to the notes in the phone, that a note was too long. So apparently I hit some sort of like size barrier there. I don't know when I started that note, because it was Instagram posts, some important mm-hmm. notes about books, something that I wanted to share on Instagram about books. So it's just bookish dedicated. And then at some point it just told me, you know, this is too long. We can't display the thing anymore.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
Are you sure you need all of these thoughts?
Yeah, so I never knew that they have limit.
I've not hit that yet. But my notes are also like June 13th. Page 42 to page 81.
That's a cool thing. So speaking of June, today we're recording this episode on the 15th of June, 2020. And it's been a rocky year so far for a lot of people. And I have a question for you, as you read a lot, what so far has been the most important or the most interesting read you've had? Like the best book of 2020 so far?
Wow. Okay. So I, at the top of my head, can't recommend a book published this year, because I, you know, I'm not going to bookshops, am I? New releases aren't really happening right now. But I just read, probably very present in my memory because it was part of the whole nature writing thing, I just read Lab Girl by author Hope Jahren. And she is a botanist, is that what you call it? Paleobiologist. and a professor. She writes about her, well, life essentially, but especially with a focus on her career and her love for plants, which sounds, you know, cute, but it really isn't. It's much more. It's sort of about friendship and women in academia, mm-hmm. and topics that I care about very much.
Yeah.
So that was nonfiction, which I don't have the numbers, but I feel like the minority of what I read is nonfiction, maybe like 20% of the books I read. But when I read them, they quite often make quite an impact with me. So that was really a biggie for me. And what other books could I recommend that have been really, really important to me? I think I've purposely stayed away from anything dystopian this year.
Too much of it outside anyway.
Yeah, it's just a bit too close to home.
Maybe something that was pleasant and distracting this year, like for you personally.
So far, 2020 has been a really challenging year. Full stops, but also for reading, because I find I read more when I'm happy, and that's not to say I'm unhappy, but you know, shit's real, and sometimes even though you're really desperate for distraction, allowing yourself to be distracted almost feels like that's not allowed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like it's a luxury. So I've
read like a lot of sort of contemporary romance books, which I just tend to not really recommend if I'm really honest, even though I enjoy them loads, like I also don't recommend everyone go out there and watch When Harry Met Sally, because mm-hmm. even though I enjoy that loads, I'm not sure whether that's the most valuable thing you can go out and watch.
That's a good one though.
Yeah, I also, like, that was the first one and now I'm regretting it. I'm like, actually, go watch When Harry Met Sally. It's so much fun.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh yeah, maybe one of the fiction books that I read this year that I just thought was great. A book I would really recommend to everyone, and it's not distracting at all, is When I Hit You by Meena Kandasamy. And it's essentially a woman recollecting her experience of domestic abuse. So that's not fluffy and it's not fun. And I guess you could say it's going to distract you from other things that are going on right now, but it's not going to distract you in a very happy way. And that was just excellent in the whole style and setup of the book. It's a topic that I find interesting. That sounds really unempathetic, but like, yeah, it is. I'm sorry. It is a topic I find interesting and important to read about. The author herself has experience with domestic abuse, so I also felt less icky reading her recollection, because I feel like she does have a voice and she mm-hmm. isn't just using it in a sort of voyeuristic, sort of sensationalist way, but she is actually working through an experience by writing this book. That was just great. Like, I gave that 5 stars if you're in the Goodreads universe, and I don't do that very often.
Uh-huh. Thank you very much for sharing all this precious information with us. I'm really glad to discuss book or reading marathons. It's just a tiny portion of what's going on, of all the interesting things that are happening on YouTube. So please make sure to visit Faye's channel, leave comments and likes in there. I will also link your Goodreads account on our blog post so that everybody could come by and see what other things you recommend. Thank you so much for your recommendations. And I hope this is not the last time we talk about books and stuff.
Books. Books and stuff. I like that.
Stuff, yeah. This should be the title of the podcast, actually. Books and stuff. Thank you so much. And see you next time.
Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.